You are listening to Chaos Springs Eternal, a Delta Green actual play, brought to you by Quartermasters of the Tabletop. This is Season 1, City of Woe. Delta Green, by its nature, deals with violent themes and disturbing imagery, as well as horrors beyond our comprehension. Now, if you're one of those people who don't mind comprehending some horrors from time to time, I think you'll have a good time listening here. Join us, won't you? And welcome back to Chaos Springs Eternal, Season 1, City of Woe. And like I think I said this last episode, this is sort of, we're moving from prologue to, you know, let's call it Chapter 1. All the previous stuff in the manor was just sort of building up. You know, I heard like One Piece, you know, they're like 1,000 episodes in, and the creator was like, man, this is how the group got together, and now we're going to start telling the story. So, in other words, I'm just like One Piece.
So we're the One Piece of podcasts?
Yes, the One Piece is real.
And that explains why I don't like this show or One Piece.
Wow.
Just kidding, wow. I love you, Dan.
Yeah, well, speaking of One Piece, we were talking about NPCs, and last time we talked about, you know, favorite NPCs, but what we also wanted to kind of touch on favorite PCs of other people so that, you know, we're not sort of hyping ourselves up, we're hyping each other up. And I gotta kick it off with our Rune Lords game, where Mark brought in one of the grossest, weirdest, strangest PCs
the best
ever played with.
Love that dude.
What was his name?
Are you talking about Phidias?
Phidias Malix.
Phidias Malix.
Who was an oracle, right?
Yes, he was, of course.
That's all I played. His campaign introduction, the scene you wrote for him, I still think about how he just ambushed some dude on the side of the road and just held a knife to him basically and said, "Leave me to town, but also I'm gonna give you a little spiel of who I am."
We're
talking and walking.
Always he's great. And I mean, obviously Mark and Oracles is like bread and butter.
good shit.
So
Oracles were by far my favorite Pathfinder 1E class. They were
the best
my
class.
Utility knife for everything.
Like, I just remember like one combat that we had where you used like a spiked chain spell, and it was the most ridiculous. Like, I think Noah genuinely wanted to like hurt you physically because of how frustrating that thing was.
I think I put down Obscuring Mist, and I also had granted everyone in my party Ashen Path.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the 1-2 combo. So everybody could see through the cloud that was on our team. The enemies could not. They had like a 50% mischance. And then I started spike chaining the dude, and he was not happy about it.
The moment I think y'all are thinking of, he's done this before multiple times, but the first time I truly saw it was when he was playing Present, the halfling oracle of Sucker, S-U-C-C-O-R. And Ashen Path, the final boss of the Crypt of the Everflame into the second one, Mask of the Living God, and the final boss, who was like a monk sorcerer multiclass who had hellhounds that he summoned through an item, and that you completely neutered him because he was supposed to be staying in the black, blasting you with like hell rays or some shit, and then it was just like, oh no, he can't see shit. Oh, he can't see shit now. Oh, he
kept tripping.
And
he kept hitting the deck. Yeah. That was good times. I liked Present a lot.
Phenomenal
Present
characters.
Was great.
My favorite Noah character is Digby.
Fuck you. That was mine.
Digby Paloma.
Digby Paloma. That motherfucker.
Microwave fast talking son of a bitch.
Best. He was your Delta Green character in the last campaign we played, and he was like a PI, right? He was like a private investigator.
He's a private.
Straight up Columbo.
It was
straight up Columbo ripoff.
And he was the best. I loved him because he just got, the more and more he went along in that campaign, the more and more unhinged he got. It was the best. He was
you say more and more, but
that's kind of the point.
It was basically the first
The first like op y'all went on.
The first 5 minutes.
He climbed over a fence, got stuck on a grill, and then he told a grieving widow that he wanted her microwave.
Because it made good popcorn.
In fairness, it was partly like he was truly interested in it, but also me as a player was just trying to think of some way to bullshit trying to get her attention, and then it just went on for this like 10-minute tangent about microwaves that evolved into, yeah, his father was a microwave salesman.
It also evolved into one of the dumbest interactions that I think I've ever had with anybody, when you were calling your wife. And she was like, that's why we call you Pop. And we have over the mantle in this house, we pop corn and we corn for Pop.
I lost brain cells remembering that. Thank you.
I still sometimes think of that. His weapon
of choice. I remember that. It was so stupid.
Yeah, it was good. Man.
Listen,
but I love that he started using at the end there. He started using the hypergeometric equation to like make coffee.
Yeah, yes. that was the first thing he did to show everyone. Just like, I can basically do magic.
I can.
I'm just gonna make this coffee good.
Amazing to find good coffee.
I also got to shout out Tyler for one of my favorite PCs is Pal.
Yeah,
that's a good one. That's love that guy. Mine for him.
Pal is my baby boy. My
is
current
he still
baby.
Alive?
Yeah, he is.
Not for long.
Yeah, probably not for long. He just got his heart shattered. So he's an android paladin of Iori. We're going through Iron Gods, and I like the idea of, you know, like, the obvious answer for an android paladin is Bri, but that's, you know, stereotype. I don't want to do that. So I like the idea of Iori picking a android to be like, this is the blankest of canvases, and he will become the best thing he can be. And him, like, I chose the Chosen One archetype, so he has his homie buddy, his little familiar.
He's a chicken.
Was a chicken. Now he is an inevitable.
Yeah,
his true form is an inevitable. But he just recently got his whole worldview flipped turned upside down. Because every person that the party has known who has died has returned. So he thought, oh, when someone dies, they just come back like in 2 weeks.
So they come back in like the opposite alignment. Yeah, so they come evil back, people like, come pissed. Back good. Good people come back kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. So like he thought that like Mianda is a major plot character. Slight spoilers. But in our game, she died, came back, was worse than she was when she died. And then Dan's original character, Iovic, who they did not get along with in the beginning, but became, in Pal's eyes, best of friends. And he died. And we had a very touching funeral in-game for him that made me cry with how Noah ran it. And the idea of this like poor, sweet android baby who doesn't know any better. So he's like, oh, Evic's gonna come back, and I'm just gonna make sure that when he comes back, he's not mean. Was his entire thing. And so, like, we found another body, and Pal's like, well, yeah, you can, like, we can do something with the body, but we gotta make sure, like, it's ready later. And the party's like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's like, oh, well, you know, she's gonna come back. And they're like, oh, no. Like, oh, no. How do we fix this?
For Dan, it's the Cinder Surges.
Yeah, I was waiting. I wanted to say Lars Cinder Surge. Yeah. Lars Cinder Surge. I love that dude.
The very
Lars
first
and
thing,
Iovic are both great.
Well, not the very first thing, but the first thing I remember distinctly about Lars was...
He can't
was
read.
It Lars or Oles that was the swashbuckler?
Oles was the swashbuckler.
Oles was
Lars
the swashbuckler.
Lars was the barbarian.
Yeah.
Lars, Mars, Nils, Oles, Emma, Gemma, Fenna.
I love it.
Christ. The first thing that Oles ever did that I was like, what is going on, is we had some haggling going on the ship, and something went awry, and then immediately Oles just started stabbing everyone.
Immediately, like, immediately, we were at the first like, sign of the deal souring, it's
first
just
sign of the deal going bad. It was like, well, it's stabby time. It just became holes on the deck of a ship, like full swashbuckler. It was amazing.
Yeah, you know, that was early on in my Pathfinder career, and I felt like most problems could be solved with stabbing.
You're not wrong.
They still can.
They still can.
It makes more problems, but you can solve them.
I didn't know how to handle it, and so I just kept having more guards come out.
I was at one point just like, there cannot be this many people on a boat.
It was like the first time I truly like starting to actually run Pathfinder instead of just like treating it like any other fucking like Saturday morning running a game, whatever the fuck. But it was just like, I don't think this is how it should go. I think I'm going to keep adding more guards until they realize and they call for a diplomacy or something.
Yeah. It was pretty comical because the ship couldn't have been like 10 foot by 20 foot and there was 55 guards on it.
There was not 55. There was like 8.
There was a lot. There was a big below decks. Let's just put it that way.
They were crammed in there like sardines.
I essentially had all of the Cinder Surges planned out. And I was like, look, I'm putting them in different places in Galarian, which is the Pathfinder homeworld. And now, if I ever want to play in one of these adventure paths, I just pick the Cinder Surge that's in that area.
I believe I've seen you play Ols, Lars, and Emma?
Yeah.
Emma Cinder Surge?
I played Emma. I also played a second gen Cinder Surge. Ooh. Was that in one of your games?
Yes.
So I played a couple 2E Cinder Surge who are the, you know, grandkids / cousins and extended family.
He did die, right?
He did die. He had his head chopped off by one of my characters.
Yeah.
But anyways, I like dwarves. I think dwarves are probably my favorite thing to play in Pathfinder. So, it just made sense to make a whole family of dwarves.
I loved Lars because he just had a hammer with a smiley face and it was called his problem solver. We played him like he was completely illiterate, but he was just like making up like, yeah, no, I can totally read. Yeah, this is, I could obviously read. What you think I can't read? Obviously I can.
Yeah.
What does this say? I'm not going to prove it to you right now. Was how it always felt. And
he always just got by. Speaking of just getting by, Glomus Riviera has just gotten by his whole life, apparently, living outside of at least, you know, the part of his life that he remembers. Since moving to Care 4, he's been living in these sort of underground chambers outside of Florizon Manor.
This guy living in Care 4, not paying his taxes.
Yeah.
Living the dream.
So last episode, y'all had made the decision to follow him underground. Thankfully, because otherwise this would have been a real weird narrative to write where you just go home and know that there's this creature living underground and you just kind of have to live with that knowledge.
Gotta nuke the site from orbit. Only way to be sure.
Yeah. And after, you know, talking with him as you stroll back to his home / laboratory.
The podcast just continues, but it's just from the detective's point of view.
It's just Detective Marr. Yeah,
it becomes
Lomas.
The book.
So y'all had talked with him a little bit, investigating these underground tunnels and getting to know a little bit about ghoul culture. You are now all probably the most knowledgeable people about ghoul culture, among humans anyway. And he had assumed the guise of Antoine Babineau, to put you at somewhat ease, given his monstrous appearance. He showed you his laboratory with all the various potions. He said, I showed you my laboratory, please respond. And then he had, after answering a series of questions, he had indicated that he did have a request for y'all in regards to Florizon Manor. And that's where we open him smiling as Marcy had just asked him, you know, are you wanting us to run interference?
The biggest frown on her face possible.
And he's got, again, just sort of a exceptionally wide smile. So, I understand that you all, except you, Detective Ma, you all are phantom finders of a sort, yes?
It's in the name, yeah.
Now, I understand that this is the first... You have not actually encountered any phantoms before this incident.
It's nothing concrete, and he looks at the other two.
Well, you see, that is not unusual. Knowing what I do of, let's call this, non-human phenomenon, ghosts are exceptionally rare. I have run into almost none. I can count the number of ghosts I have encountered on one hand. One human hand, anyway. And so the fact that you have run into, I believe you said there were multiple entities. Do you know how many there are?
At least two.
Two?
Right? We don't have a definitive yet, but we know of a Marguerite and a Colette.
I don't know these names. Colette, Marguerite.
Marguerite was one of the children of the manor. She begins like patting her sides. I think I have my notebook on me. And she'll like pull out a small series of notes that she's just had on like this like hand pad, and she'll like pass it over to him to like look through.
Okay, so what notes do you have on there?
It's basically just going through like the entire information she got and took down from her study at the library about the history of the manor, passed down through the sugar plantation stuff, automobile production, how it was used to like possibly run a little speakeasy under that we now know is true, how it may have served as a smuggling supply for the French resistance, shit like that, and everything into that information. But do we have that book that was thrown at us?
Yeah, Joel has it.
Okay.
This is he'll hand that over as well, of course.
He's looking. He says, "Layla, yes, I knew Layla Babineau. That name, that person.
How do you know of her?"
Again, the same way that I know of you. I have known almost every citizen of Carefor to some extent or another. He says, I don't... And who else do you think? You think Layla is one of these ghosts?
We know that one of them has been responding to the name Marguerite.
I think I talk to a Colette.
I saw white hand touch before she I'm so sorry, Joel. There was something on her shoulder before she started acting weird.
Okay, and you think that is Colette? Colette sounds there's some familiarity based off these notes. She wasn't there for long, so I may have not gotten to know her well.
It was, I think that was her tutor?
Well, and if she spent all of her time in the manor, I would not have been able to observe her.
Dan, can I, we're taking a lot of this on credit kind of thing. Can I just, like, check and see if this entity is telling us the truth about things? Or at least try to discern what his manner is? Because... this could all just be, I need you to do something powerful for me so I can be more powerful.
Hey, that's a great point.
Oh.
Hey, kids, you should, if a ghoul invites you to their lab,
right,
you shouldn't believe everything they say just off the bat. Right. What would you like to roll? I mean, the obvious is Humint, right? But
right.
The problem that arises from Humint,
right,
is the fact that he's not a human.
Correct.
I
mean, a cult, maybe?
Yeah, I think you could roll a cult. That would seem to make sense.
I'd love to do Hument, but I can't do that. Yeah.
While he's speaking about many unnatural things, and he himself is an unnatural entity, a lot of this would sort of bleed over into a cult.
Okay. And well, I'm going to try.
I'm going to tell you right now, if you get a 69, you're going to learn something that is going to blow y'all's freaking minds.
Oh, man.
Could I also roll a cult?
Well, I mean, the other thing I was thinking was a cult and then criminology.
Okay.
You tell me what? Which.
I think you should roll a cult.
Okay.
I have an argument for Hument.
Okay. Mm.
He is trying so hard, so desperately to hold on to that last shred of humanity. Why wouldn't he have those mannerisms? Those ticks? I mean, he's watching people, and so he can clearly
That. There's a mechanical reason why.
Okay. That's what I was curious about.
Ghouls don't have charisma as a stat in Delta Green.
That'll do it.
So, this guy has no riz.
Yeah, I think, but you know what, Tyler, that's a great point. So if you do want to roll Hument, that's fine. You can do it. You've convinced me.
Okay. Are we all rolling Hument then? Or are we going to try to spread it out?
Everybody pick what they want to roll. Maybe something you haven't leveled up on.
Psychotherapy?
Hey, if you want a psychotherapy, I will tell you this, you'll probably want to fail it, because if you successfully psychotherapy a ghoul, I don't know means.
That's not good.
Something we haven't maybe leveled up. Oh, you know what? Great. Archaeology. There it is.
Solid 0%.
I think Hument is the best one I have.
I'm going to go occult, even though Hument's better for me.
I am actually going to roll psychotherapy.
20% of success for me.
79 failure.
Okay. Go ahead and
mark one off.
You got luck?
It has to be a natural, though.
Yeah, it does have to be a natural. You can't buy your way down to a 69. Just like you can't. You also can't buy your way down to a crit. Like, that's just.
Critical fumble?
Yeah, if you want to buy your way down to a critical fumble, you can do that. That's fine.
Okay.
Keep that in mind.
The option is on the table.
That one is on the table. Okay,
I got a 70 over 45 for the listeners.
All right, so Marcy and Joel both failed on their psychotherapy and Hument, but Cyril, on your occult role, you succeed. And I think what this represents is that as you observe sort of the wall of potions, and maybe thinking back to that sort of the ritual, you know, circle, some sort of like occult markings in that chamber, you know, looking at all this, like, this guy is clearly very talented when it comes to magic and the occult. If he was trying to use it offensively, you imagine that he would be blasting through things.
Sure.
He doesn't seem very threatening. He just seems incredibly, you know, wise to this. And you don't see anything that's like, oh, this is like obviously some sort of like, this is obviously, you know, something that he intends to do harm with, you know.
Okay.
He talks about putting some sort of magical ward around to care for. Well, you might not be able to do that. You don't even know if that's real, but that's right. Not something like that's something that could be possible and obviously wouldn't be like offensive.
Sure. Okay. I'm just trying to read, like, because we're taking a lot of this on faith with him or them or whatever, and I don't understand. Like, we're just like, oh, okay, you know, I don't want him to, like, have us rid this house of entities and then suddenly be like, you fools, and, you know.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get access to this house so that I can run my spells and, you know, kill all the humans.
Listen, he just wants to party up there. I get it. It's a big house.
It would be a good house for house parties.
It would be, I mean, not in its current state, but, you know, refurb it a little.
A rave.
Yeah.
You're telling me this ghoul is trying to get into the real estate game?
Yeah, he's actually, that's, I mean, the whole thing.
Most people in real estate are ghouls already, so.
True. Yep. True.
Stamp collectors and real estate agents. That's
goodbye.
It's a very thin market. I don't think we're trying to.
In front of God.
It's a very thin slice.
There's one stamp collecting real estate agent out there who's like, fuck these guys.
I know. I think it was one guy.
It was that one guy.
He's from the future.
All right. Well, I don't remember the last thing you said, but at some point, you know, sort of, if you're talking amongst yourselves or like examining his lab, he's like, yeah, so it looks like Marguerite and Colette may be the two entities that it seems like, I don't know, it doesn't seem in your notes, you know, who Marguerite is or how she may have been associated with this house, but appears Colette has some sort of positive impact on Layla, and as far as I know, Layla was a good member. She upstanding. I don't think she was dabbling in any of the occult or any of the other strange history that might be found in this manor. Now, I suspect that based off what I'm reading, these tunnels that I have stumbled into might have been ones that were used previously for running various, perhaps illegal activities.
It seems like you just missed the party, too.
Does appear that way. I've not found any caches of weapons or drugs or other things. Damn. Yes. Apologies. I understand those are very popular among you humans.
You don't even know. So I'm assuming you're not the one that sent us those dreams last night?
He looks at you kind of quizzically. No, I do not interfere in the dream worlds of other people. I suspect there may be a little bit of psychic assonance that has attached itself to you from your associations with the house.
I know you said you didn't know much, but my sister, she showed up. I think something got to her. I think she was possessed. I drew a salt circle around her and she vanished. Something had to have gotten to her, right? Like, salt doesn't just do that to a person, right?
No, not in my experience with people, though I will admit I've never drawn a salt circle around a person, but that does sound, it does sound like something that would work against other entities. I don't know about ghosts specifically, but perhaps a possessed human maybe, you know, crosses that line between human and ghost, and that thing that could, let's say, affect the ghost might affect the human. Now, it could be that you have temporarily restrained her to something beyond, well, your human senses. Things like salt and ash and silver, these objects have great power against sort of the, let's call them the spiritual entities. And it's possible that you have, well, if she was fully possessed, it's possible that you have moved her on to the other side temporarily. Usually those things aren't permanent, but it's difficult to say, and again, the house has a way of, well, I theorize anyway, that the house was a way of amplifying the magics that go on inside of it. So perhaps your salt circle was amplified as well.
That was a long-winded way of saying you don't know. Good. Okay.
My apologies. I wish I could answer your questions more clearly, but I can only speculate.
No, I get it. It's fine. It's just stressful, all right?
Are you saying that the one of the offending spirits might be unable to do anything right now? Is that why you took now to reach out to us?
Well, I took now to reach out to you as you were all within the vicinity of the basement. And easy to speak to at once. I did not want to waste time with having anyone gather.
Are you able to tell when one of them is watching you?
No, I was actually unaware that there were ghosts in the manor. Again, I've been shielded from entering beyond that room.
Right. Do you have a means to... No, you would have... Sorry.
I may have a means if there are indeed wards placed on this house. I may have a means to destroy the ward that would allow me to enter. But it would also allow whatever the ward is keeping in to exit.
Oh.
So, last possible decision, basically, is to do that.
Well, inevitable decision, I would say. But first, I think that you should take care of the ghost that is in there. At least, there are two. Perhaps you need to take care of both. Or perhaps one is a good ghost and one is a bad ghost. You never know.
Okay. So, you said you wanted something of us.
Yes, it would be to go destroy the ward on the house. That's my desire.
Do you have a direction? An idea of where it might be? Or are we just going to be stumbling through the dark again?
You just said that would allow whatever's in there to roam free.
Yes, so I would hope that you would exorcise the ghost first. I would still provide you means to break whatever ward is placed on the house. And he walks up to this wall on this side where there's like, you know, he's got his like a little bed over there and then just a table filled with like random junk. And then like he digs through the junk and pulls out this gold amulet about the size of a CD, about the thickness of a CD. And on the front is a sort of bluish, like bluish purple triangle that is pointing down. So it's gold with like a mounted stone and it's on a leather thong. And he says, this amulet, if you find the ward itself, which could look like a number of things, but generally would look like some sort of circle, maybe like the one that I had drawn in that room with Antoine. Apologies for that grisly scene. It was part of attempting to raise his body. It could look like a number of things, but it'll be something strange and unusual.
Speaking of Antoine, you said you found him in a field?
Yes, just after the hurricane.
Was he just laying there? I know you ate his heart as part of some ritual to get him back alive. But how was he dead? Do you know?
When I came upon him, his bowels had been cut out. His entire... Well, someone had slashed him through his torso.
So that wasn't part of your ritual. That was something you had found.
No, yeah, that was sheer happenstance.
And since you've been in town for so long, do you know of anything that could have done that to a grown man?
Says there are things that could do that. I will not say that that could not have been a ghoul, but if it had been a ghoul who was striking out at a human, they would have consumed his flesh, which did not happen.
Where is this field?
I can take you there if you'd like.
I would like to see it at least.
Okay. Do you want to do that now, today?
No, we don't have to do that now. I'm sure we got more pressing matters. But I would be curious to see where he had been found and the state. If the state of the area, I know the hurricane probably wiped out a lot of stuff, but I'd be curious.
And Detective Marr, at this, he comes over and he's like, this might be kind of a weird request, but can you recreate his body with that body? Glomus looks up and he's like, well, yeah, I think I could. Hang on one moment. And he like moves his hand over his torso and it, you know, opens up and his guts spill out. And he's like,
we all throw up.
Something like this? Yeah, actually, this. Go ahead and make a sanity check. Detective Marr is not going to make one because he specifically requested this.
He worked the road.
23 under 72 for me.
Before it happens, Joel says, like, great minds, detective. And then that happens. And he, oh, I pass. So he's like, he hurls for a second. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. All right.
Mercy fully just turns around.
So everyone passed. 23, 18, 58, all under your scores. Man, Marcy, you're already a 50?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
In true Marcy's been having a bad time. Also, oh, I love it's always Noah's character. It's always Noah's character.
Always.
Always sanity.
Well, okay, so at this, he does that. And Detective Marr comes up to him, and he looks, and he's like, yeah, that looks, I mean, this looks like a knife. Knife cut. I don't think it's doesn't look animal. Doesn't look like, you know, any sort of blunt. Blunt. This looks like knife work.
I too think it's a knife.
Yeah. Do you want to roll a criminology on it?
No, I just really wanted to be like one-upping the detective here.
But yeah. After you say that, he's like, "Yes, knife." I'm gonna guess. Oh, shit. I'm gonna guess a. He's like, I think it's probably a 4-inch blade, well sharpened, maybe a hunting knife or something.
Yeah, maybe a 4 or 5-inch blade could be very sharp.
He looks back at you. He's like, yeah. He says, now is this the color of the skin when you saw him? And he's like, no, I can do that though. And his color changes to sort of like pallid gray, like almost blue.
I was just going to say pallid gray. That's so crazy.
And he's like, Detective Marner's like, yeah, it looks like, okay, so you were definitely dead for at least, probably 6 to 12 hours. That was probably before the hurricane. So you probably killed either like before or maybe during the hurricane and then maybe got dumped out there in that field.
Did he have blood still in him when you came across him?
And he says, no, he did not. He had been exsanguinated. And Detective Barr's like, oh, that's really strange. I wonder if they did that before or after.
Yeah, the body had been exsanguinated, that's for sure.
He didn't have any obvious puncture wounds?
You mean other than the knife through his belly?
Yes, but you're not going to bleed someone out fully just through a gut slash.
He begins removing his clothes and he's like, I don't remember if there were any. He's fully naked now. I don't remember any puncture wounds. No.
Whoa.
Joel whistles.
he's like, no, I didn't see any on me. Do you guys see any? I can't look at my own back. I mean, I could, but I imagine it would be very disturbing for y'all to see that.
Can we make some kind of check on him?
Yeah, you can make a criminology or just like a search roll.
Yeah, I'll take the search roll.
Wow.
Just seeing anything out of the ordinary. Ooh, 1955.
Nice. All right. Yeah, Joel, as you look over his body, you don't see any like bite marks or like any puncture wounds in his arms, anything to suggest that he had been like drained by like a phlebotomist. So he's like, no, I don't know.
Detective Marr's like,
yeah, well, I would say the vampire theory is ridiculous, Joel, but given, and he just sort of like gestures vaguely to everything
around him.
I think that actually is probably astute observation. No, but I'm guessing, looks like, I think he's probably killed. And then exsanguinated. He's like, can I take a look at some of these organs? And he's like, begins poking at like the liver.
Oh my.
And he's like, well, the liver's pretty rigid. I don't know. I'm not
Joel loves away during this. It's been this a while is where it gets too much for him.
Since I did any of that stuff. He's like, okay, all right. And he's like, well, that's kind of strange. You said you took the heart, right? Yes, I took the heart, and that was part of what I consumed. I understand Antoine's an important person, so I did away with my baser instincts, which said to just consume him, and instead I tried to raise him from the dead. Although I will admit that part of me is thankful that it didn't occur, because that presents its own sort of challenges, such as having to explain to Antoine who I am and the fact that he had died. People tend to don't really accept the fact that they had died and came back. It's quite stressful.
We could at least maybe get something out of him, at least on how this happened.
Very true. That is part of the motivation that caused me to at least try in the first place. And Detective Marr is like reaching around in his cavity, and he's like, "This is the weirdest thing I've ever done, by far, bar none. But here's the problem: your liver, kidney, that's fine. But your spleen is gone. You don't have a spleen now. It's possible that Antoine just got his like spleen out, but I think it's just important to note that you are spleenless." And he says, "Well, that is strange. I know that most humans do have spleens."
During this, Joel's looking away, kind of looking over at Marcy.
Where the fuck is a spleen located?
I don't know.
Why does he know where a spleen is at?
I failed biology, I'm going to be honest, Joel.
I never took it.
It's like, I'm a detective. I've done some crime scene stuff. Like, you got to know stuff about the body, right? You can't depend on the... You can't depend on the morgue and, you know, the medical examiner to get everything. Like, and especially if we're at a crime scene, we got to be able to identify it immediately. So,
and what are you gonna do if like the morgue burns down like randomly? They're like, then you're just shit out of luck entirely.
It's like, I heard that happened to one morgue guy out in Montana. What do they call them? Morticians?
Yeah. Coroners.
Yeah. No, you had it right. It's Morgue Guy. Yeah.
It's Morgue Guy.
Morgue Guy, Morgue Gal.
Morgue Guy's my next superhero character.
That's my favorite sort of D6 based RPG is Morgue Guy.
Morgue Guy? Yep.
Morgue Guy?
Show me the Morgue Boreas.
Anyway. I just know where spleens are. It's not that weird. He looks at all of you and he's like, "This is way weirder than knowing where his spleen is." and Glomus looks down and he's like, "Yes, can I return to my regular complete human form?" "Oh yeah. Pardon me." And he, you know, wipes his hands off on his pants and he's like, "This is definitely the strangest thing that's ever happened to me." The Glomus looks and he's like, "Now, listen, I hope y'all understand that I do request some discretion. I would like this to remain between us all. I would prefer not to reveal myself to the humans, just because of some pre-existing prejudices on y'all's part against things that eat dead bodies."
I mean, can you like blame us?
"No, again, you know that there was some psychic pain associated with eating dead bodies on my part."
"Oh.
Hang on, sorry. I have another question, real quick."
"Yes, please, I am an open book."
Okay. We should exorcise at least the bad ones before we get rid of the border that's keeping whatever in and out of Florizon Manor."
"Yes, that would be ideal."
"Do you have, I don't know, like an anti-ghost orb or like, I don't know, some words we can say in a like book somewhere?
Do we have to solve the riddle of their death or something like that?"
How do you exorcise a ghost?"
"You wouldn't happen to have like a backpack that shoots..." I just gotta ask. You have these weird chemicals. You said you were a wizard. I just wanted to ask y'all. I'm sorry.
He's a wizard. He's not Venkman.
A backpack that shoots what?
Yeah, I don't know. High energy proton. It's been a weird fucked up day, man.
Proton beams.
"Oh, no, I do not have anything of that sort. But yes, I think you're roughly correct in that exercising the bad ghosts might be a little more difficult than helping the good ghosts move on, if indeed they're both good or both bad. But you all have tools. You are phantom finders. You at least, from my understanding, you have some sort of protections against the otherworldly entities, correct?" You said you had salt. Are there other tools that you use? I mean, there are many things. The burning of sage, prayers.
That works?
Oh, yes. If it didn't work, why would you humans have hung on to it?
That's a good point.
Yeah, but we do a lot of weird shit, man.
We do a lot of stuff that does not work. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
So how are we to know what is
next? You're going to tell me Amityville Horror is like a documentary, and I can't deal with that.
Please don't let that be true.
It says, I do not know anything about Amityville Horror. Sorry. I do not keep up with, is this a book or TV show?
Sort of. Anyways, no. Yeah, we're the Phantom Finders with a PH. Like, we fake our stuff, man. This is the first time we've ever dealt with anything real.
But you had the knowledge to bring at least salt, so surely there are other things you could try.
Yeah, I brought a fucking RC car that got destroyed by rats.
Did you bring that with the intention to fight ghosts? I've not heard that in my...
No, it was just... I've been looking for an excuse to use it. Okay. And now I'm not going to be able to use it again.
No judgment on my part, but yes, I mean, surely you know of ways of forcing the spirit's hands, summoning them to you. Perhaps you could bring them into a place and then lock them in that place and then harass them until they move on. There's a multitude of things you could do.
So you want us to bully a little girl ghost?
I do not know if bully is the right word, but...
That's what it sounds like to me.
If that is what you have to do, you all understand that ghosts, if they're good, are victims of a sort. Victims of their deaths. They cannot move on until something about their death is solved and they have absolution. But evil ghosts, he looks at each of you. Evil ghosts, they have made choices and decisions. Things that are... I mean, they have treated with things far darker than things that just eat dead flesh.
All right, well, I guess we gotta figure that part out, right?
Detective Marr is like, I just really want to know, do you have Antoine's body still, or is like it now part of your essence? Because I have to, at some point, I have to have a body to write my report. And I honestly, I'm going to lie about this report. I'm not, there's none of this is going in there. And he says, oh, yes, Detective, I trust that. In fact, if you all don't mind, this would be ideal. I would like to put you under a magical obligation not to reveal my secret and my identity. This will cause no harm to you on my life. You can hold a gun to my head to ensure that, you know, no harm comes to you. This is a simple thing that will just prevent you from revealing my name and location.
Would a gun actually hurt you?
Oh, yes. Guns will definitely hurt me. You know that I can...
How do we kill you?
Oh,
I'm not asking that. I just mean, like...
Show me exactly where the vital organs are.
Explain to us how we can murder you.
You understand that I do not go... I don't age. I don't... I technically could go forever without food. Without consuming human flesh. I've figured that out. And I don't die from cancer or disease or any other, sure, what you might call natural causes. But if a tree fell on me, I would die. If I get shot and bleed out, I would die.
I just meant, like, I didn't know if, like, the pain index for a ghoul compared to the pain index for a general bog standard human.
Marcy's got that array of like smiley faces that you get at the hospital.
He's like, he's like, I can sustain significantly more damage than an average human, but the only way for me to bring myself back up to health is not through rest and relaxation, but through
I need to get a bowl of ant to really test the scale.
please do not. If you don't,
what is it?
Mind.
The Schmidt Pain Index, is that the
yeah,
one?
Something like that. Yeah.
Says this is completely painless. It will just prevent you from talking about me or this location. And this location, I mean my laboratory in these tunnels.
Like, we can't physically mention anything about here and you directly.
Yes, you could mention that there's a series of tunnels near floors on Mana, but only in the context of them pre-existing. In fact, due to the wards that I have over this tunnel, had you not been my guest, you would walk through this and not see any of this. It is essentially invisible to the human eye.
Is there a way for us to discuss it where it's just us and just trying to speak openly, or will it just be like we're talking in circles?
He says, as long as you are only with the others under this privileged, as we call Gaes, spell, G-E-A-S, it will bind you to this and this only.
Insane.
I mean, you're asking us to do a lot for you. You don't trust us enough to not mention you to anyone?
He says, you understand I have been alive for a while.
Oh, I get it.
And I also was a human. And while I don't have all of my human memories, I have enough to remember that even the most well-intentioned humans, while not duplicitous, may reveal things that are beyond what they should reveal.
Listen, I don't know about the rest of you. I plan tonight real fucked up. And if this prevents me from saying some dumbass shit that I'm not supposed to, I'll sign it. Where do I gotta sign?
That is the other thing, is it does provide your GM with an opportunity to retcon any conversations you might have.
I was feeling like this is a little bit of like some plot armor that was happening.
Yes, it's, in fact, Gaius is the French name, which is translated into English as plot armor.
Plot armor, yeah.
DM bullshit.
It's actually an old Haitian term. See?
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I got to push back on that just a little bit here. Like, yeah. Come on now. Yeah. That's no, good. But it's all good. Yeah.
He says, if you accept into this, then please. And he pulls out just a ring, like a solid like brass hoop that's about probably like 12-inch diameter. He says, please hold to this with your hand. And when you are ready, let me know. As you all gather around, Detective Marr is like, yeah, well, it'll stop me from writing about it too, right? Like, I won't accidentally reveal any, you know, ways to get in here. And he's like, well, there's always, magic is not perfect, but essentially, yes, it should prevent you from revealing any obvious clues. Now, if you went out of your way to really go, you know, try and skirt around it, I'm sure even, you know, a clever human could, but. This will prevent at least the most accidental things.
Sir, are you saying we're not clever people?
No, I'm saying you are clever. This is, if you wanted to skirt this, you could. And, this, you know.
I don't have any intention of aggravating a ghoul who apparently knows that I went to go see the Bowling for Soup concert a couple years back. I don't think I want that on me.
Yeah, also, that's really fucked up you stole my album. Like, that was a first pressing, and my girlfriend got real mad with me. That's kind of fucked.
Well, you understand that I need to take things that are deeply personal. So that I can attune to the psychic energies that allows me to get to know you better. Hey, Mark just wrote a message. And
am I right?
Part of it's inspired. I mean, obviously the Gaius has always had that sort of like, any sort of thing where you're like, oh, you can't, also Howl's Moving Castle, you know, a little bit inspired by that, but yeah, yeah. Also Wit's Curse and Trust of the Emerald Sea, very much so, I would say. So, as you all gather around and grab this, brass ring, he mutters some like, just sort of like really breathy, like, obviously not English, but very you know, strange sounds that almost seem like they shouldn't or couldn't be made with a human mouth. You feel like a wind sort of like build up around you, encircling you, sort of, you know, following the brass ring. And then after he ends it, the wind settles down and he says, "Oh, okay, this should keep y'all here between us." Now, again, you can speak among yourselves. And as long as no one's eavesdropping, you should be able to do so freely. And of course, if someone's a powerful magic user, they might be able to get this information out of you.
Well, that's a good way to know that we're being eavesdropped on. We can just start talking about ghouls.
It's like, yes, I suppose you could use it in that way. But again, like I said, as long as you're not trying to circumvent it, it should keep you from any accidental or incidental mentions.
What comes out if we do? Does it just
the nature of this magic would simply stop up your tongue so that you would not be able to speak. Okay, it might be embarrassing for you, as you would appear essentially to be rudely giving someone the silent treatment.
I stammer all the time. It'll be fine.
And is there any way with all your magics here that you could empower us for this ghost hunting expedition? Other than this ring or whatever the ward breaker that you gave us?
This is, again, when it comes to ghosts, ghosts are fairly rare. And I'll be honest, humans have more ways of dealing with ghosts than wizards do. That might sound strange to you, but...
We need a cleric is what you're telling us.
I'm sorry?
Every party has to have a cleric, from what I've been told.
Well, if you have some sort of religious leader, they might be of assistance to you.
Let's get the pastor up in here.
And he says, "Oh, Etienne. Well, you know, I don't know if he has much experience with exorcism, but that might be a good idea." And Detective Mars like, I sure hope not. Can we not get him?
Yeah, let's not.
Why not? Why not, Detective?
He's like, I don't like that. I mean, I like the old pastor a lot better.
I'm with you there.
I stopped going to church, obviously, when the new pastor came in, because, I mean, he just moved it all to the contemporary stuff. And, like, look, I'm not super religious, but if I'm going to go, I want the, you know, ceremony. I want to feel like church. I don't want to feel like a weird coffee shop concert.
There's such a thing as too informal. Like,
yeah, I don't like my pastor in a polo. Am I old fashioned for that? Sure, why not? But, you know.
Okay. If you can find us another priest in Care 4, then we'll use him. How's that sound?
Okay. I mean,
I think I have a cousin who's ordained.
Yeah, well, any of those might work. We'll do some research. There's a Catholic parish that's a little ways out, but you could go.
Oh, no, we're not getting them involved.
Oh, okay. All right. Fine.
Fine, then. They'd enjoy it too much is what the problem is with the Catholics.
They'd be like, we knew it this whole time.
Yeah, they'd be like, this is just affirmations.
Yeah. All this suffering was worth it all in the end.
Yeah.
Well, which one of you would take this? Just make sure you hang on to it. And he holds out the amulet.
You take it, Joel.
Yeah.
You are more of the potty face, I would say, so it kind of makes sense.
You take it.
It was a little metagamey, if I must say there, sir, but...
Sorry, I'm a wizard, so I know things that are beyond human comprehension. And he holds up his hands and like... I've tried to not go too meta with this guy, but he is an extremely powerful ghoul wizard, so...
Yeah. I was about to ask out of character what everyone's willpower is, but that works for me.
So what route should we take, y'all, to get rid of these ghosts? Should we try an exorcism, or should we try maybe letting one of the ghosts take one of us over and getting rid of it that way? Capturing the ghost, solving their riddle death?
I think we need to talk to Colette first again. Properly not just in hushed tones over someone's shoulder, trying to make them feel better about themselves, but like figure out what she knows and what she can do to help us with Marguerite. Or Marguerite could be the fucking good one and Colette's the shithead. I don't know. I just don't know anymore. We need to explore every inch of this the grounds.
And explain to me again, maybe I missed it, but why does he want us to do this?
Because like, he's interested in the manor and he can't get in there right now.
So he just is like, get rid of the stuff in there because I want to go in there because it's a place of power.
Yep.
He said nothing as to what he wants to do after he's in there.
Nope. He has not said. You've not asked him.
Well, I'm going to ask him that and be like, Glomus, listen, we're willing to help you in any way we possibly can, but you're awfully intent on getting in this manor. And I understand that you're probably seeking some sort of power or, you know, probably would feel good to be at a height of a power. I get it. We humans feel that too. But the problem is we don't know what your intentions are after we get rid of these ghosts. Like, what are you going to do in this nexus of power?
He looks at everyone and he says, now I will admit that there's something I have been holding back from y'all.
I knew it, liar.
And I can now, knowing that you are in the circle of trust under the gaze, I can tell you all that the ward that I have put over care for is beginning to fail. There is something that is making its way into care for, and as far as I know, I'm the only thing that is keeping it out, and I would like to use the manor with its particular power nexus, as you've described it, to recreate and reinforce the ward. Because if the ward falls, then whatever has been attacking it will get in. And I believe that y'all are all familiar with the human turn of phrase, better the devil that you know. I warn you that the devil you know, and he sort of gestures to himself, is far better than the devil that you do not. There are things out there, entities, that will make whatever ghost you're dealing with look like an ant that you step on a hot summer day.
All right.
And I think that's a good place to call it for now.
For sure.
And so we will. That's where we're going to end it. Thank you.
Thank you once again for tuning in to Chaos Springs Eternal Season 1, City of Woe. It's been a great week. This is, again, where the real thing kicks off, and I'm really excited to see where this goes. Check the links in the show notes, leave us a review on iTunes, and we will see you next week.
Hey,
wild.
I just want to point out real quick that it's pronounced Geish, by the way.
Is it pronounced Geish?
Yeah.
No, I've always pronounced
Geas?
I've always heard it pronounced Geish.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
What's the Celtic geese have to do with this?
Geese. Yeah, geese. Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
Well, he's not. anyway.